Coming up today on Entrepreneurs Worldwide.
I remember going to the audition and they went, come in an outfit to impress to the final audition. And so I went in a little a micro skirt and red blazer. I went in this like dynasty red power suit. I went totally blank once interviewing Leonardo DiCaprio because I was like, oh my God, he's so fit. There have been moments where things have gone very wrong and you never want to relive that. So what you do is through mistakes, you learn how to conduct yourself. You learn to be a bit more relaxed. You realise what the worst that can happen is. And, you know, it's only television. You create a product that people will sign up to. So you, by signing up once, they're going to come back. It's repeat business.
So it's a Ponzi scheme.
Well, the idea is that you want people to continuously purchase. So when we sold our first batch in April 2020, we had so many subscribers that we had to stop marketing within a fortnight. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to fulfill the subscription. I've gone through it all. I've gone through panic. I've gone through success. I've gone through worry. I've gone through worry for other people. I've gone through wondering what my next job is. I've wondered whether I needed to have a plan B.
There are a lot of good presenters that aren't working.
That can't get work.
Why is that?
And it's there are a few jobs now, unfortunately.
Jenny Faulkner, it is absolutely amazing to have you here on our Entrepreneurs Worldwide podcast. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me.
30 years as a TV presenter and a radio presenter as well. If that's not insane enough and just so wonderful, you co-host not just one, but two podcasts, Run Pod, which is all about running, which thanks to you, you asked me to come on and talk about my running experience, which I absolutely loved. You've had over 10 million downloads, which is incredible. And you also host another podcast, which is all about travel. You're also an entrepreneur and launched your own brand, Colo Health. I've got so many questions. So does Roz. And you're a mother as well. Jenny Faulkner, welcome to Entrepreneurs Worldwide.
Thank you so much for having me. It's exciting to be here. And it's funny when you mention all those things, you go, oh, that's quite a bit, actually. I literally don't know how I do it all. Sometimes I do wish there was an extra day in the week, but there's not. And it's only because I want an extra day to do all the sport I want to do and do all the exercise I love doing. So sometimes work interferes with my round of golf, which is frustrating.
What did you want to be when you grew up?
An architect.
You're kidding.
I wanted to be an architect, and I was I'm still pretty obsessed with, you know, the beauty of buildings. So if you took me to a museum, I'm not really that, or an art gallery. I'm less interested in the contents. I'm more interested in the exterior and the buildings and the design
really?
Of the actual building itself.
Very similar. I absolutely love buildings.
Yes, Roz does, because she's from land.
Land development.
And you, in fact, more so than me, you're always commenting on buildings, aren't you?
Yeah, you're more the interior. Absolutely.
I'm all fur coat, no knickers.
Okay. But we all need someone like that in our lives, Richard.
Absolutely. I'm the fluffy one.
But yeah, I really genuinely thought I was going to be an architect, and I was kind of choosing subjects at school that would guide me down that route. But there was a massive recession on, and the word was that nobody was getting any work as an architect. This was like in, I suppose, the early 90s when I was choosing my A-levels, and they were like, you're never going to work as an architect. So I was like, what? So the back of my mind, I thought, one day I will design skyscrapers in Spain or New York, because I wanted to do Spanish as well at uni.
Did Latin as well.
I just changed tack, decided to just do languages, and then I fell into television.
You slightly fell into TV. I haven't even told Roz this, because I wanted to see her reaction.
Is it polite?
So how on earth, she's one of the best known TV and radio presenters in the country. How did she get from being on Blind Date with Cilla as a contestant to then, with no thought of going into the media presenting world at all?
I just turned 18. I was doing my A-levels, and we all bunked off school one afternoon because the auditions were down in Reading, where I lived. And we had a couple of free periods, so we left school, went down to the auditions in school uniform, and I got through to the next heat. It was like, I suppose the only thing to liken Blind Date auditions then is like X Factor auditions or Britain's Got Talent auditions. I know that sounds ridiculous, but Blind Date was huge. Everyone wanted to be on it. I mean, it was getting like up to 20 million viewers on a Saturday
night. Of course, in those days, for our younger viewers and listeners, There was no streamers. There was no Sky. There was no Sky TV.
If you didn't, and just everyone TV. Went out after watching this. So everyone was talking about it. This was the original dating show. You know, forget Love Island. This is what we had on offer.
So you'd obviously kissed a boy by then.
Well, I mean, just Rose. Just 18. that's what my parents need to know. So I went and I got through and I got through. I had to do like a couple more auditions, got through onto the show.
So you were confident at 18?
Well, I mean, yeah, I remember going to the audition and they went, come in an outfit to impress to the final audition. And so I went in a micro skirt and red blazer. I went in this like Dynasty red power suit. I remember being 18 and feeling like I was going to
go. I bet that's on YouTube. It must be, isn't it? I'd love to see it.
I don't think very much of it is on YouTube, really? To be honest. Yeah.
There's a pretty good outfit, actually.
Yeah, well, I got through, I got on the show and it was just after I'd got my A-levels and I was on holiday with my friends and I got home and they called and said we'd like you to come and film Blind Date. So by going to film Blind Date, I was going to miss Freshers Week. So I missed Uni Freshers Week, went on Blind Date and it was amazing and I absolutely loved the whole experience.
Well, you're the picker, so you've got the gig. You're in. Yeah, you're going on the holiday or whatever it is. Yes.
So I got the gig. I picked a guy called Donda.
Talk me through that.
So there was me in my little sparkly dress on the night and I picked the one that made me laugh because why wouldn't you? Yeah. And he was Donda Xenophondas, and that's his name. And he was a Greek Cypriot living in Tunbridge Wells. He owned a fish. In Maidstone kind of area. He owned a fish and chip shop.
Quite near you then.
Yeah.
A good week away.
I actually am still in touch with him and his family.
Really?
His children, his wife, they've all been in touch with me. This is through social media. So I kind of keep tabs on how they're getting on.
So what was it like on that trip? How did you get on?
We got on as friends brilliantly. There was no romance, but we got on so brilliantly. We had the greatest experience and it made me think, this is really fun. Television's brilliant. But you're obviously getting this gorgeous kind of perspective. You're getting this where you're treated like a star. Everything's being done for you. You're not slogging away, dragging the kit, helping the camera crews. You're just there being the stars.
Did you feel like that? Did they make you feel like that?
They made you feel like that.
Now, do you know what's racing through my mind? Jenny Faulkner at 18 years old, there's no way he didn't fancy you. So come on, there's no way.
You must have been.
I don't know.
Why was there no romance?
You didn't
fancy him in the nicest possible way.
Do you know what? I was a bit taller than him. He was. Do you know what? We were chalk and cheese.
You talked about how you loved the whole vibe of the television studio.
Yeah.
Of course, in those days, big budgets. So how does your presenting career start on the back of that?
It's so weird. So Blind Date was huge, as I said. And when I picked Donda, the papers went a bit wild for it. I mean, we were front page of The Sun, The Mirror. It was nuts. I was fully dressed, page three girl. So I was at university and then suddenly journalists were going to the local pub asking people what they knew about me. And I remember being in the pub on a Saturday night, the Original Oak in Leeds. And this person came up to me and went, oh, I just did an interview about you outside. And I was like, but we don't know each other. And he went, I know, but I said I'd seen you in here. So weird.
Amazing.
And it was bizarre. With one show being aired, like everyone at uni knew me, I liked the fact I could exploit that and get work experience at the local television studio. So what happened was it made the front page of the Yorkshire Post. It was all over Leeds the night that I was on. And the local radio station got in touch, went, we'd love to do an interview. And I went, well, fine, as long as I can do work experience. So from that point on a Sunday morning, I don't know why, I thought it was a good deal, at 6 a.m. on a Sunday, as a student, I would go down to the local TV studios and sit and watch them do the local news, watch them do the radio. And then when Blind Date came out, they did an interview with me. In the interview, I said, I'd love to work in television. And a producer from BBC Scotland was in Leeds, listening to BBC Leeds, heard the interview, got in touch and invited me to audition for a show they were doing in February, which, funnily enough, went out the day before I turned 19.
To do what? Present?
It was a presenting.
Wow.
So I did. It was like a 15-minute show in studio on green screen, and I just talked about crazy adverts. It was for a special night on BBC Scotland called the Old Alliance, where they celebrated the French Scottish kind of link
so
and connection.
Business head was already operating.
Yeah. And then off the back of that, I got invited to audition for a series, and I was competing against successful established presenters, and I got the gig.
Were you trying to finish your degree, or did you just throw it in?
So I just was doing all alongside my university. But when I got, I remember I was on the last day of term, Easter term, and I was in the union, student union bar, had quite a few snake bites and black, and I had to go and make the call from the payphone to find out whether I'd got the job, because it'd been a huge audition, and they needed a male and a female presenter. So I phoned them, and so I mean, imagine now phoning from a payphone and
lovely.
Hoping the person was in and could answer.
Fabulous.
And I found out I got the job, and she went, so you're going to have to, you've got the job, Jenny, you're going to have to quit uni and you're going to have to move to Glasgow. And I was like, oh, I hadn't really thought about what would happen if I got the job. Yeah. So I hung up, went back to my friends. I went, I've got the job, I have to leave uni. And we were like, what? We just carried on drinking in the bar. And I think the next day I had to really give it some thought. But yeah, I got the job. Me and my co-presenter was Doogie Vipon from Deacon Blue.
Wow.
And the two of us, we got the gig, and we started working together 3 weeks later.
How long did that go on for?
3 years.
3 years. Wow.
So you're just this sprightly, bubbly, but smart. It sounds like there was a calculated, strategic brain engaged.
Well, I think I just, well, do you know what? Try things. I've always been, let's try this. It's a great experience. What an amazing opportunity. I mean, I was a terrible presenter. I'd never done anything. I wasn't worldly wise.
Was it live?
No, it was all pre-recorded. Okay. So the first show we did was called The Big Country, and it was kind of like Blue Peter for adults. I think that was the best way of describing it. It was an action, adventure, travel show all around Scotland. So the day one was skydiving. That was my first show. It went out every Friday night in Scotland. It was absolutely amazing. After series one, we didn't think it was coming back. So I went back to university, restarted.
Why didn't you think it was coming back? The viewing figures weren't great?
It was great, but I didn't understand the commission process. So I didn't hear if we had a second series. I didn't have any other work in television. I didn't really know what to do. So I went, well, I'll just go back to university. And I went back to university, and actually I auditioned. Because I was only 19, I was brought in to audition for all the shows, the Broom Cupboard, you know, all the BBC, the Fully Booked, all these Saturday morning shows, but I had no experience in live television. And actually I didn't get any of them. I didn't know how to do live telly. So it's something I needed to work on.
Was that a lot of money for a 19-year-old that you're getting paid to do a local TV?
It was national television in Scotland. So it was BBC Friday night.
But it's proper money, is it?
Yeah, it was proper money. I mean, I lived in Glasgow. I rented a flat in Glasgow. And then also, remember, I went back to uni. I also was renting a flat in Leeds. I had my car. I remember going in and buying a car. Like literally writing a check.
So at what point are you thinking, this has to be my career?
I loved
this
so much.
You loved it.
From the start.
So Sod Universe.
From Blind Day, I wanted it to be my career.
So, but you're working for BBC Scotland, right? So that should filter down into the UK. So just fast forwarding, then you find yourself working down in London, right? Well, what was your first job down here?
There was a bit of a transition. So I, 3 years of doing The Big Country, and remember, I'm doing university alongside it now. So I used to in my contract, I had to have days off to do exams. So that was what I negotiated. So I would drive down to do an exam and back up. And then after 3 years, the show didn't come back. So I just was like, right, I'll go back to uni. I'm going to be going to Spain and Italy this year anyway to live. So I went back to uni and I thought, do you know what?
But that would have been the end of your TV career, right?
Well, I didn't know, but I thought, I've got to get a part-time job. I'm not used to just being a full-time student. I'm used to having an income.
But weren't you thinking of sending your tape out to everybody?
Yes, exactly what I was doing. I've never sat back. And I knew that in Leeds, you've got Yorkshire Television. So I just phoned them, wrote them letters, sent them my reel. And I mean, I literally phoned them up and they went, come in for a meeting. So I went in and literally the next week I was working on local television in Leeds, and then a month later I was auditioning for 3D, which was ITV's huge documentary series, basically the predecessor to Tonight. I got the job, and so by 21 I was hosting, Julia Somerville was the host and I was the reporter on that. And then alongside that, Yorkshire Television just put me on We Can Work It Out, which was ITV's Watchdog. I worked with Judy Finnegan on that.
Did you?
That was live. And that was when I got into live television.
Because it's amazing actually, because those shows used to come out. I mean, I remember Watchdog here, it was Thursday night, and that was always live, wasn't it?
So we were Thursday night. We were up against EastEnders as well. So Judy was doing This Morning in London, so she would come up from This Morning on a Thursday to Yorkshire Television. She would take Friday off from that point on because she was in Leeds on a Thursday night. We were live on television on ITV at 7:30 every Thursday. We were up against EastEnders. I always remember it so well. I always remember coming off the show, we'd all go to the bar, and Richard Madeley would always phone the bar and tell us all what he thought, and he'd always come on and go, "Well done, Jenny,
really?
You were so good." And it was my first live telly. It was
how
amazing.
Did you master that then? Because you said you didn't get those jobs previously because you have to work
so
on it. But you can't work on it until you get the gig, can you?
Well, you have to learn about talk back, and I'd never had any experience with that before.
Explain talk back, because Richard explained
that
to me.
So, well, when you're live on television, I mean, you're live on TV and someone has to tell you what to do, or someone has to tell you what you're going to next, or if there's an issue, which camera you're on. So you have an earpiece, and the director will be talking to you, or the producer, whoever, will be feeding you information that you need to know. Meanwhile, you still have to be doing an interview, you still have to be talking to camera, you still have to be presenting as normal, but you have to adapt to getting used to...
I was shocked when I heard that.
I couldn't do that when I was 19, because I'd never experienced it. But by regularly doing it every week for, 2 years, you got used to it.
I always remember Jerry Hall was presenting something, and she clearly hadn't done anything live.
I've seen this clip as well.
Yeah, and she's got talk back, and she cannot. And bless her. I mean, she's probably never done it. She sort of froze, and she sort of looked down the camera and went, "Sorry, what?"
I can believe that.
What?
It's quite a skill also. I mean, if something goes wrong and you have to fill, you have to fill. Or if something goes wrong and you have to get out of the show now before it cuts off air.
When Richard told me that was happening, I've watched him since very closely to see if the brain, if his eyes show any sign.
Oh, yeah, because it will happen with you. Your segments all the time, they'll be like, your 5-minute segment is now 30 seconds.
They never give you any more, do they? It's not. Oh, actually, the good news is you've got 6 minutes. Actually, no, you've got 10 minutes.
Oh,
there.
I tell you what,
never
one
works
time
that way.
When I worked on GMTV. In fact, most of the jobs I've done now have been live. I worked on GMTV with Ben Shepherd, and we were doing the Christmas episode of Entertainment Today. It was one Friday. Jason Donovan was our guest, and we're live, and we're kind of doing the interview. And then they down our earpiece, they went, "There's been some timing issues. You've got an extra 4 minutes." And we're like, "Oh." We got Jason singing. We were all singing like Christmas songs. We wish you a Merry Christmas. And then we were going, "And let's go again." Oh my God. We were just filling time like nothing else. It was so...
But Jenny, did you just come out as a child as this bubbly, no problems, happy-go-lucky?
My mum and dad always said that I was the perfect child.
Oh,
I was so good, so lovely, perfect, did everything, slept well, all of that. And that's why they went again and had my brother. And then it was a completely different story.
Just to check.
I mean, obviously, since then, I've been very different and I've given them loads of challenges through the years. But generally, when I was younger, I was very well behaved. I think I've never wanted to do anything that might displease my parents or might unimpress them. So I always used to be, studious, good.
I think what Roz is saying is you've balanced. Got a wonderful confidence about you. Is that from years of coming to studios like this?
Believe me, I started presenting in 95. Mm. I have done quite a lot in that time in terms of television and radio and commercial work and, now social media and different sports and interviewed different people. I've been, interviewed film stars and politicians and people who've gone through terrible experiences. Mm. So I think through having tried and tested everything, I've found that I am comfortable and relaxed with with myself. Because what's mm-hmm. happened is there have been moments where things have gone very wrong yeah. and you never want to relive that. So what you do is through mistakes, you learn how to conduct yourself. You learn to be a bit more relaxed. You realize what the worst that can happen is. And, you know, it's only television.
If you're building a company, and I know you're an entrepreneur and I know you've built a company with your husband, and you're used to pressure, you have a certain kind of pressure. It's not a caustic pressure. You may have the risk of you losing your house in the early years, and maybe you risk losing something else later, but you jump off the cliff, solve it 3 seconds before you hit the ground, and you're used to that sometimes monumental pressure.
Yeah.
You're talking about a different kind of pressure. It's quite a caustic pressure where people can hate you easily. Yeah,
and that's very true. And with social media, they can tell you. Yeah. With all the keyboard warriors out there desperate to tell you as well. But the problem is you have to become quite thick-skinned. Yeah. You have to not listen to people. I once worked with Tim Lovejoy, actually. I remember saying to him, I'd had this awful message come through. Social media had just started. Someone said something awful on Twitter. And I was like, it really hurts. And he went, yeah, but what about all the nice ones? And I went, well, you don't look at the nice ones. And he went, well, why do you look at the nasty one? And I was like, okay. And he went, I get nasty ones all the time. You just don't look at them. Don't look at any of them. Don't look at the nice ones. Don't look at the nasty ones. So you learn to be thick-skinned, not to be judged by other people. Also, by the way, there are very difficult times as a presenter because there could be periods when you don't know what your next job is going to be. And it's a freelance industry. So that can make you feel quite insecure.
Do you ever go totally blank?
Well, in terms of interviews, oh yeah, I have done. I went totally blank once interviewing Leonardo DiCaprio because I was like, oh my God, he's so fit. And anyway, I didn't know what to say.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Just say that.
So you never know what's going to happen. But you just have to learn how to deal with those situations. And my experience, I've gone through it all. I've gone through panic. I've gone through success. I've gone through worry. I've gone through worry for other people. I've gone through wondering what my next job is. I've wondered whether I needed to have a plan B. And now what I do is, at 49, I have a plan B. Oh, I have done for a while. I enjoy every job while it's there. I always look to not just rely on one thing. So television presenting, for instance, is not something I've relied on. And in fact, actually, I don't really do much television presenting now. I do everything else around it, which I have found so much joy doing. So I've branched out. I have not been afraid to take risks.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll get on to your radio career in a minute. Do you ever get nervous anymore before you're going live?
So I've stood on stage in front of, thousands and thousands of people. And I'm not going to lie, when you get up, you're like, oh my God.
So that's still,
you have to do is take a deep breath. Take a deep breath, gather yourself. Your first word might be a bit croaky, like, hello. But then that's it. That's as nervous as you'll be.
Tell me what makes a good presenter. How do you get the best out of your guest?
Listen, when I started presenting and doing interviews, producers would work and they'd give you a list of questions. Often, I don't have any questions. I just know what I'm going to start with, because your next question should really be dependent on what their answer is. It shouldn't be dependent on the list of questions you've written. Of course, you might have ideas of where you would like to go or things you would like to get out of them. But sometimes I'll go into an interview expecting to talk about X and you come out not having talked about X at all.
How many years were you on GMTV?
I was definitely there 10 years.
I mean, 10 years. That was 6-7 million viewers back in the day. Was that with Fiona Phillips?
Fiona and Eamon were on the news, and then I did the entertainment on Friday.
I want to ask you about your running, because I find that quite interesting.
I started, properly, age 19.
I did run for many years. And when my father died, and I had a lot of pressure with the companies I was doing with my ex-husband, I used running.
It's like therapy, really.
It is
running, because it's your time and you can go wherever you want in your head. Also, it's just a great way to switch off. If you're angry, you can vent. Yeah. If you're sad, you can think about it. If you're stressed, you can de-stress. You can take the weight off your shoulders. And it's so simple.
Entrepreneurs Worldwide with Thompson Tindall.
What you've got with Thompson Tindall is a boutique, very specialised wealth management company, and a company that I trust implicitly. And I've been with them 6 or 7 years, and he has done wonders with my money.
Entrepreneurs Worldwide with Thompson Tindall, getting a grip on family wealth protection.
Please note, the value of your investments can go down as well as up, so you could get back less than you invested.
you've done 10 marathons, right? I mean, that's insane. Yeah. Before you came here to the studio today, you said you've done 5 miles this morning, but you're on the street, you're on the, you're road running, right?
Yeah, I mean,
What about your joints? Why have you had no injuries?
Well,
collagen.
I know, but I think...
we'll come on to that in a minute.
Genuinely, I created a supplement to look after my joints.
That's, is that what Colo Health is?
Yeah, your... for years I was taking collagen supplements and actually to make a difference to my joints, to protect my joints, to look after my body from running. And as a result, actually, there are lots of lovely little perks, like it's great for your skin and your hair and your nails.
Yeah.
And I just came home one day and my husband was working. He was working from home and he had Tash who worked with him. And I just got in and I was like, oh, I just wish I had a better collagen. I genuinely said that.
Explain what collagen is.
Because collagen is, it's a protein that's found in the body. It starts depleting when you're 25. And when it starts depleting, this is when your skin loses hydration. It's why our skin starts getting a bit wrinkly and dry, and that's why you'll find creases maybe around your eyes, around on your face, and your joints might start aching. Of these, everything you don't want happens as a result of the loss of collagen from age 25. In fact, it accelerates for women through menopausal years as well. So, and it's men. It happens to men as well. So by losing collagen, basically, here we go, by losing collagen, you feel older. Right,
and just tell them their willy gets bigger and they'll take it.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It's
mind
amazing.
You, his is fine.
Helps hugely.
Do you mind? This is a family show.
Sorry.
Well, I just decided to create my own collagen. So literally, Tash and James went, do your own. And
how
I was
the
like,
hell
I
do you know what's
and
in
I
it? Bones,
I literally went, I do the not bro. Know how to do that. And they went, well, we'll do it. So their business meeting that they were working on, because James had a company that he was doing social media marketing at the time. And
is he an entrepreneur by nature?
Yeah, absolutely. So he went, right. And so him and Tash, they turned around and went, let's park what we're doing and let's focus on this. So we all sat there and we came up with it and they went, we're going to look into it. So, I mean, they are instrumental in this being propelled forward, because as much as I wanted it, said I'd like it, knew what I would like in it, I had no idea what to do. So it was down to a lot of research done by them, investigating, finding factories, finding the right formula. We tried and tested a lot of different collagens, and we ended up going with a premium marine liquid collagen with vitamin C, with B vitamins in there, with L-lysine as well. And we created this delicious supplement, collagen supplement. And then we went to
What do you mean delicious? It's not a pill. It's not a capsule.
Well, it's a liquid. Disgusting, but
it's a liquid.
There are,
I've seen people
I mean, why take a supplement that's disgusting?
Yeah.
Why would you? I'm not going to take it.
So do you feel that all the supplements before Colo Health were
inferior?
Yeah, but how do you know that? How do you know that?
Because we put more collagen in.
Okay.
We went out of our way to find an amazing, branded, brilliant collagen with clinical studies, with proven results. A lot of people that, I mean, go online now, go on TikTok shop. There are collagens being sold by everyone, which are white label collagens brought in from China, powder collagens, packed out with fillers. You have no idea what you're putting in. In fact, a recent study that was done on creatine gummies, okay, there's a brilliant PT called James Smith. He does a lot. He's brilliant. He's a health influencer in the fitness world. He's amazing. He did a lot of research and he found that creatine gummies, a lot of them brought in from China, have no creatine in them, but they're being sold on TikTok shop.
Oh, I can believe
so
that.
Our product is proven. We've got all the clinical studies. We've got all the science you need there. Anything you want to know about our product, we have put it there in black and white. We're very transparent as a brand. We don't want to take anything away. We also don't want to overprice a product for our customers. So we're very competitive. And in fact, actually, we launched the first week of lockdown. Imagine that. We're like, oh, is this going to work? And it did. I mean, we sold out.
How did you do that? How did you get it out there?
Through my Instagram.
Through
literally launched through my Instagram. Within 2 weeks, we're pretty
well. Okay. Everyone knows. I mean, the good thing about someone like you is everyone is going to trust you because I know that your reputation is on the back of it.
But you don't can't know. Afford. But you don't know.
No,
but do you?
I mean, you're not. You're a savvy lady.
So it took off, and then we've assessed our product. We then decided to put more collagen in, and we decide we've changed it as we've gone along, and we are now the most awarded collagen brand in Britain.
Wow.
And
how do you spell it?
K-O-L-L, Collo.
And yeah. What is Collo?
Well, we spent hours trying to work out a name. Believe me, this was hours, weeks, months. Right. We just all sat like, what shall we call it? And
Collo
was what it became. And Collo. In fact, we've gone through a massive...
Because I won't name the brand, but I did use collagen for a long time.
Okay.
And I actually stopped it to see if there was a difference, and there is. So I did it for all the reasons you're saying. Yes.
The amount of people that come off and then go,
my hair got thick. I went from having strand-like, ridiculous hair to, if you grab it now, which Richard regularly does, in frustration, it's thick. It's actually something
don't
to get hold
to
of.
Keep saying this is a family show.
Sorry, you're not part of this. You just don't need to respond. But and then my nails got thicker. That's what was shocking.
I think people want a magic pill that will work the first time they take it. Now, consistency is key with anything.
3 months.
Yeah. So I say within the first few weeks. Up to 6 weeks, but it could be within a week. Some people think it's within a fortnight. You will notice a difference with your nails. And I have to actually cut my nails. They grow so long and so fast, and they're super strong, and they've never been like that until I took this amount of collagen. The next thing you will probably notice is your skin. And you might not notice because you look in the mirror, but other people will notice. You noticed
it. Do you know what it was? It felt like it was my consistency of my skin was sort of not thicker. It sounds wrong, but it was just...
It's more hydrated.
More hydrated, that
and
was
more
it.
Plumped.
Plump.
It's well, do you know, when I was younger and started taking collagen, I actually had quite bad, I was in my 20s and I had quite bad acne
spots,
under the skin.
Right.
And the collagen, it went.
Cleared it.
All the skin issues went. And the only reason I started taking collagen was because I started running.
Yeah.
And someone that I worked with this morning said, he actually said you better take collagen to protect your joints, but as a byproduct you noticed that everything else was beneficial.
Do you think there's such a thing as runner's face?
Well, I mean, they say that it's because you lose weight.
Remember Trini telling me that the reason why she didn't want to run because she didn't want her tits to sag.
Well, that's a good point.
Well, they do. Every step's
a bounce.
Is
it true?
If you don't wear a good running bra, of course you're going to damage all that breast tissue. Every run, every step is a bounce. So, I mean, imagine that.
Right there.
So I'm just being aware, when this is turning into too much of a girly chat, this is Entrepreneurs Worldwide. What I want to ask Jenny is, when you said it took off, what does taking off look like?
Well, okay, as a subscription brand, you create a product that people will sign up to. So you, by signing up once, they're going to come back. It's repeat business.
So it's a Ponzi scheme.
Well, the idea is that you want people to continuously purchase. So when we sold our first batch in April 2020, we had so many subscribers that we had to stop marketing within a fortnight. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to fulfill the subscription.
Jenny,
so
that's
we had to
incredible.
Rein it in. And then what happened was, obviously, that's a lesson learned. You have no idea how. And obviously, we're a small business operating at the time out of our kitchen. You know,
were you really?
Yeah, and it's, I mean, if still to this day, most of the videos are shot in our kitchen. You know, I think that's what's brilliant. It's Tash, part of the family now. It's a family business. We all can work on it. Tash is brilliant at managing the logistics. James, he manages the online element. And between them, they kind of manage the factories. I am deemed the face. I'm in charge as well of product development and kind of that side of it. And between us, if we need an ad done on a Sunday morning, well, James is like, right. And we can film.
Wow,
can turn it around.
It's like Richard, when you did, if the factories are always the thing that's the most daunting for distribution, because he had to do it too. So he was here, there, and ever all over the world, getting his different products out through these factories. But to find the right factory or one you can actually rely on, how did you go through that contract? Was it a contract or an...
Yeah, you have to... I mean, we wanted a British factory, so we did look... We had to source our ingredients, and then we had to kind of work with factories to find out who could work with us best as well. And then we had to decide what we were going to do. So actually, for a long time, we actually... we did the distribution as well. We had our own distribution centre. So we had a base in Chiswick. We had a huge warehouse. We employed lots of staff. We did our own distribution. I mean, it was a big, big operation.
How many staff did you get? Well, you're still going.
I mean, we had 20 staff at one stage. Well, but actually what we decided to do was we now have a distribution warehouse that we work with, a fulfilment centre. So we don't have to fulfil ourselves anymore. And we still have our factory. We are expanding and it's super exciting. So we're going to be going to a different level.
I'm holding myself back from asking you, where's the factory? What's the name? Because I know there's someone out there wanting to know.
Yeah.
But I think that's...
I wouldn't tell you.
Yeah. That's the same as what you did. So I expected that response and I get that response.
That's all right. As a good presenter and a host, you have to ask those questions.
Yeah.
Jenny knows that.
Yeah.
What's the cash flow like on a business like that?
I mean, we're good. We are on a par, if not bigger, than all our competitors, okay? Yet they have a lot of staff. They have a lot of overheads, I guess. We are a small team and we keep it in-house. We haven't had to go for VC money. We haven't done any of that.
You managed to finance that yourselves.
We are...
Grow slow, grow carefully.
Do you know what? We've just stayed lean.
Yeah.
And lean has worked. We haven't been extravagant with cash. We don't do fancy influencer weekends away. Money goes into marketing. That's where the spend is.
James, your husband.
Yeah.
What made you pick him?
Well, I don't know if he picked me or I picked him.
He's an entrepreneur.
Well, he's actually an actor. I interviewed him.
Oh, wow.
I met him on set of a drama.
I used to say when I was a child, God, please never, ever let me ever, ever desire to be a hippie or an actress. And you went and married one.
I married an actor. I married an actor. And actually what happened was he's an actor. He did loads of ITV dramas. He did soaps, BBC dramas. Yeah, when I met him, he was in a show called Cutting It. He'd been in Emmerdale. He's done Corey. He's done Acme
Where's
Bridge.
He from,
he's from Bradford.
Oh.
And over the years, he actually started working behind the camera. Then he set up his own live streaming company. And then he decided, you know what, I'm going to teach myself marketing. And I was like, oh my God, here we go. And he just goes, he locks himself away.
Wow.
And he learns this amazing new skill. And he learned everything there is to know about social media marketing. And then one day he had loads of clients. And then one day when I came in and talked about collagen, he's like, let's do that. And now that is pretty much what
that's
he does.
That's a true entrepreneur,
but
isn't it?
Yeah. We have
that's a true entrepreneur.
Two more companies launching as well.
Wow. Do you really?
Earlier, Jenny, you did talk about your plan B. Is this your plan B?
I think so. Television was plan A.
Yeah.
Then plan B was like, let me try radio. Oh my God, I loved radio. So I went and did 6 till 9
on
Sunday mornings on Heart. And then they offered me 4 a.m. till 6:30 every weekday. And I was like, that is early.
Yeah,
but I'd get up at 2 every day. But I could still go and do This Morning and Lorraine and all the other shows that I needed to start at 6:30 for. I did that for almost 8 years. And then finally, I got moved to a breakfast show.
You are the only single female breakfast presenter, which is an absolute wonderful achievement in itself. How much autonomy do you have?
You know where all the structure of your show is, and it stays like that. So when people listen, they know at 20 past they're getting the travel. They know at the top of hour they're getting the news. So they know what to expect. They know if you've got a feature, exactly when it is, which is why you might listen to a radio show. You know it. 8:15, you're going to get like the showbiz news or whatever it is. I've been very much part of creating that on my show. And then within the links, I will find the content and bring the links myself. And I do have a producer now. For when I was on Heart, I did not have a producer, so it was entirely down to me.
You didn't have a producer?
No,
wow.
I did for the first year to get me used to it, and then they left me. So I would come in, I learned how to drive the desk from the start, which is when you've got all the machinery, basically, all the buttons in front of you, and you need to understand how to make the song work, you know, how to put the microphone up. You want to be the one in control. There are quite a few presenters who don't drive the desk for whatever reason is up to them. For me, I want that element of control.
You have been in this business for 30 years. You have seen it all. and you have reinvented yourself. You've gone on to radio. You've been not scared to try things. I mean, this is the girl that went on Blind Date as a punt. How is it that you've managed to do that when it is such a insecure life? It's an insecure world. Now we've got AI coming in. They may be taking your voiceover job, all of that kind of thing. You've had all these reality TV stars, and I've had so many people that I've spoken to that,
so many times,
that just get really bitter about that. You know, how the hell can somebody that, you know, it's just one big brother bloody well be presenting this, you know?
Everyone was that person at one stage, though. I'd have been that person at first when I came in, and everyone would be like, who the hell does she think she is? She was on Blind Date. And for a while, when I in the early 2000s, Wags got all the jobs.
Yes, absolutely.
Nuts.
Absolutely.
Wags came
right
around. And then you're right, reality stars and the Towie Law that made into, I mean, there are waves. Just you have to be confident in your own ability.
But there are a lot of good presenters that aren't working.
That can't get work.
Why is that?
And there are a few jobs now, unfortunately. There are very few jobs, and there are a few presenters who are amazing and everyone loves them. They get booked repeatedly for, you know, quite rightly, because they're good. But unfortunately, I don't think television companies are willing to take risks on their big budget shows. So they will stick to what they know works. And then the smaller shows, maybe they're looking for a bargain, or quite often, actually, they're looking for people with a social media following, because they can absolutely promote that show through social media. So this is the next thing. So presenters, people like me who've been around for a long time, really have to get a bit hotter on social media, and some people are nailing it. You have to move with the times, adapt, and learn how to stay a little bit relevant if you can.
I just don't know how you have time for all this. I mean, talk me through RumPod. 2019, there were hardly any podcasts. Diary of a CEO, for example, he started in lockdown. But you started a year before that. Where did you get that idea from? And also, there must have been plenty of time when no one was listening, Jenny.
Do you know, I always wanted to do fitness stuff. And I remember going to my then agent. I wanted to do a fitness thing. They went, it'll be so boring and so vanilla and no one will buy into it. Maybe early 2000s. How wrong that was. So then when podcasts came about, I was running and listening to podcasts. But there wasn't anything I enjoyed listening to while I ran. They were all repetitive, or once you listen to one, you listen to them all. And I just thought, I want something that keeps me running. And so I came up with RunPod. I remember some people going, it's a bit niche. There aren't many runners. And I went, there are loads of runners. And by the way, that's what is great about podcasts. You're catering for the niche audience. I mean, I got my first million quite quickly, my first million views, and it kind of listens and downloads or whatever. And it kind of propelled on. It's been going for 6 years. I've no idea how many what the number is now. It's just been going. And I love it.
But you're doing 3 a week.
I know. So I do a main episode, and then I've got a spin-off, and then I do like a kind of Monday motivation episode called The Extra Mile. And I just love it.
I remember Jenny telling me that absolutely massive celebrity, but came on a show. And when she got there, Jenny found out that she didn't actually run.
And you're like, this is interesting. I mean, it's nuts. I've done over 500 episodes of RunPod now.
I was the only other one. Yeah. I was the only other one.
Yeah, you are a runner.
There. But you can tell. You can tell when someone doesn't. But you know what? We've got I've got a loyal listener base. There's a Facebook group around the podcast, and people call themselves members of the RunPod Run Club. It's a great community.
Oh,
I'm really, really proud.
There's a question I wanted to ask you about your relationship with your husband, because you seem like such a good team. You've got this incredibly successful Colo Health brand now together.
You're not in control of your destiny as an actor, but as the owner of a company, you're the one in charge. And so I think he loves that control, and he understands what I'm going through. I love being a presenter, but again, you know, only with the podcast, because I am in charge of my podcast. He's very encouraging, but at the same time, he understands why, for me and for him, we have other stuff going on that we like being the bosses of.
Yeah, yeah.
You're on death row and you're given your last meal. What is that last meal?
Oh my God, you see, I am...
Just a couple of packets of collagen.
Of course.
Colo Health. Although
by that stage, you won't care, will you? You won't care, won't make any difference. Then. Apart from the fact it tastes really nice. Well, I'm not a big foodie, by the way.
No,
are you not?
I'm so not either.
I do. I appreciate great food, but
I find it a pain in the neck.
I wouldn't want something super fat. I mean, no. I'd probably be like,
what, super fattening?
I'd be like a pizza. I'd be like, if this is my last meal, we're going in with
or maybe,
all the favourites.
What about your Scottish heritage, haggis?
Oh yeah, no, maybe not.
No, I
maybe
like
some
haggis.
Caramel shortbread. I mean, I'm a big fan. Do you know, there was, I did a show once. I did a show for BBC One. I was we were living away and we had gifts sent to us by our family on camera. And most people got flowers, right? And my mum went, "Oh, don't send her flowers. Send her ice cream, because she loves ice cream." I absolutely do. So everyone was getting beautiful flowers and beautiful letters. And I got a tub of ice cream, which by the time I got it had melted. And I was like, well, that is the most rubbish thing. My mum was going, but you love ice cream. I know I love ice cream, but of all the things you could have sent me to remember home, I got ice cream. But yeah, so maybe just literally pizza, ice cream, maybe some Thai food, something spicy. I mean, that's me. Culinary delight in there at all.
I think a lot of women.
Do you know what?
I think a lot of us, when we get to a certain age, food is, I think it's really a man's world.
Do you know something? Nobody who we have asked that question to actually have any culinary delight. No, they're all roast pork and crackling. Oh, everybody goes back to the basics.
I am possibly the worst chef in the world. I mean, I will burn my daughter's dinner on a nightly basis.
I'm worse. I am that bad.
But the only thing I can make, I am the expert in like Hasselback potatoes.
What's
they're
that?
Not really very hard. They're just potatoes.
Michael Hasselback. What's the name? Not Michael Hasselback.
I mean, I don't. Yeah.
Sorry. That was an intrusive thought.
Fascinated where your mind is going. Well, anyway, that's my one thing I can
make. Are they like roast potatoes?
They're kind of a roasted potato. Oh, they're amazing. And that, I could eat them all day long. And then throw in something really spicy, like Thai on the side. Yeah, there's nice, me. I'm
lovely,
happy.
Lovely. Right, well, yeah, the only thing really is, well, now, the only thing is, I would probably go for Thai as well, because actually I tend not to when I'm living, because I always get heartburn in the middle of the night. So if I was actually going to the electric chair, it wouldn't really matter.
Have what you
but
want.
You know what? I read something. We watch all these funny documentaries.
Serial killers
and all these things. And there was someone on death row, which really bothered me. Actually, I woke up thinking about it because she refused any food before she was...
Oh, is this where you were getting your ideas? You're watching what they're all having.
Well, probably. But she refused any... She refused food. And I thought, why? Yeah, why would you do that?
Eileen Wuornos.
Oh, that's right.
The female serial killer, who actually, if you look into her, she actually was very un-serial killer-like, but anyway, it's another story.
Jenny, what a wonderful, incredible career you've had, reinventing yourself all the time, and absolutely a wonderful guest you've been on Entrepreneurs Worldwide.
Thank you both of us,
I just want to give you a big hug, actually.
Thank you so much for coming. Thank you for having me. And listen, for anyone else who's thinking about trying a new business or trying a new opportunity, just do it, because the worst thing that can happen is that it doesn't work.
Yeah, who cares about that? Thank you.
Can you do us a favour? Can you hit that follow and subscribe button? You can find us anywhere where you get your podcasts on Entrepreneurs Worldwide. And there'll be a new episode every Wednesday at 5 a.m.